those that have caused this climate crisis will be held accountable and liable for their actions. And so far, they have refused to take responsibility. The founding principles of the UNFCCC of common but differentiated responsibility and the polluter pays have been watered down over decades. And sadly, we're seeing this today with negotiations around loss and damage, especially even after the horrendous impacts of the climate emergency this year, especially in Pakistan, Nigeria, and many other places. Till today, we are looking for, they're proposing false solutions, temporary solutions that do not address the core of the climate crisis.
Well, that's what we're going to be doing all week, is addressing the core issues here. Who's responsible? What needs to be done? Ahmed Eldroubi is the Greenpeace Regional Campaign Manager for the Middle East and North Africa. That's right. All this week, Democracy Now! Is broadcasting live from Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt, from the COP27 Conference of Parties, the UN Climate Summit. Democracy Now! Produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Kirk, Dina Guzman, Messiah Redzner, Ian Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warner, Tarina Nadura, Sam Malkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Dennis Moynihan, Mary Conlon. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, board meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month starting at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Good morning. You are listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO.FM, 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis, and via the World Wide Web, it is KBOO.FM. We are broadcasting on this day. It is about 8:01 a.m. on the 14th day of November. And I'm Cecil Prescott.
I'm Celeste Carey. Good morning. I guess that means we're on the Ides of November. Well, pretty doggone close to it.
Okay.
The middle of the month.
The middle of the month. Yeah.
Yeah.
How are you this morning?
Well, you know, here I am. It's Monday, the sun is out, so I'm going to be optimistic. I'm gonna take that as auspicious beginning and try to project that, you know, forward.
Okay. Excellent.
Well, I was laughing because I was trying to think, okay, can I spend some pithy segue from, you know, a cold and chilly morning here in Portland with the sun up into our topic. You know, was there a segue there? And alas, I could not think quickly enough to come up with a segue. I have failed.
Well, when everything failed, just jump into it. So.
Okay. Failure.
failed last week.
Well, you know, I was thinking about two things from the Democracy Now, the episode that we just heard, and one of them was the concerns about the response between China and the United States over that summer visit to Taiwan. And as one of the guests on the program mentioned, you know, Taiwan, different political experience for people because it has something like democracy, okay? And he said democracy, a democratic, you know, government. And I'm thinking, I'll call that something like democracy. And I know that that was one of the titles, or rather topics that we had today, was a discussion about our American experiment in democracy. So I guess there's the segue, because we were thinking, is the American democracy, is it unraveling? And so I guess that would be a failure, huh?
Well, it could be. And we remember the popular American tale, now whether it happened actually in history or not, who knows? But we remember that following some work of the founding fathers, because they were all men,
mm-hmm.
the Constitution, there's this quote that a woman came up to Benjamin Franklin and ask him, you know, after they came out of their deliberation, what type of government have you created for us? And Benjamin Franklin says, a republic, if you can keep it. And that is a good question for us, not only after, you know, January 6th, but everything else that's been happening. What's the status of our form of government? That's a good question.
Well, and so there's the segue for the topic. And here's how we came to that, folks. If you recall, one of our recently past shows, we discussed the ballot measure 114 here on More Talk Radio. And 114 was the ballot measure addressing elements of gun regulation. Okay. People want to say it was a non-invasive way to help stem gun crime and unlicensed and criminal and even licensed gun use that basically has been hurting our neighborhoods. People did not want to lose any more loved ones or have any more community upheaval because we've got various challenges with how we use guns in this country. So that that ballot passed. But the interesting thing about that was that there are some sheriffs who are part of the united effort against crime in the state of Oregon. They say they're not going to enforce this measure. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, that's interesting, because they're law enforcement. Aren't they sworn to protect? Aren't they sworn to uphold the law? Isn't there some reference to upholding some element of the Constitution in the midst of that swearing in as a peace officer? But that was not the only thing. So don't focus on just ballot measure 114 and its implementation. There's more. There's the fact that we also have concerns about election fraud and election contentiousness. Then we have counties in this state for example, they want to secede from the state and form a different union. And then we have states like Tennessee that have disenfranchised as much as 21%, it said, of some of their black citizens. And so Tennessee had decided, well, you know, other states might have made it easier for people who had passed convictions of felonies to vote, but we're not going to do that. So we're looking at this. We're looking at the fact that Trump has said that he broke the law to help DeSantis win elections. And we're wondering, is the great experiment of democracy failing? Is it unraveling? Is it falling apart? And so that's one of our topics today. Go ahead, Cecil.
Well, I was going to say, you know, this the question about whether democracy is unraveling, part of the discussion is a discussion of definition. What is democracy? How do we define it? How do we know it? How do we live into it? I'm saying this because I believe that democracy is more than filling a ballot every November or every 2 years, and that by focusing on the electoral process, we are only holding our attention on one aspect of what this democratic experience is. So it includes the aspects of informed citizenry, access to education, free press, ability to speak, a lot of things in terms of building community. And what are some of the barriers that prevent democracy from living, being fully enacted in our lives? I'm thinking of, you know, the 21st century robber barons who dictate access to information for large segments of our population. And if you do not have access to information, how can you be an informed citizen, and how can you make decisions? So these are not new to our experience in this 21st century, perhaps amplified, but it is something that continues to be a battle in terms of defining what is democracy, how do we ensure democracy, and the question is, well, it was a nice experiment, but maybe we need to move on. Might be some people's concerns.
And that's one of the issues, you know, that we want to discuss, is like, has it unraveled? What's going on? Now, you're right. It's more than the electoral aspect that we want to talk about. And one of the reasons why I bring up the fact that we've got counties wanting to secede from the state, and we have sheriffs not wanting to enforce the law, shows that there are other aspects of this democratic republic, as people will say, or the democratic experiment that are failing. So that's some of the examples that we want to offer as we say, is democracy in the United States as we know it unraveling? Is it changing into something a lot less beneficial and a lot less helpful, because people are not interested in the benefit of the common good? You know, we're focused much more on the individual good. And so I see it unraveling, and just curious what you think. Now, we have another topic, too.
Well, let me just respond to what you just said.
Yeah, go ahead.
in terms of unraveling. I think in part we have to, as you suggested, define what it means, but in terms of how we live into our reality. You know, this certainly isn't something new, and the examples you use, you know, for any casual observer of American history said, oh, this sounds familiar. There was attempts to secede a century and a half ago. There were attempts to define federal mandates only 60 years ago. So this push against the common good is something is not new, that points its heads up periodically throughout our history. And the challenge is, do we want to make a more inclusive society, or do we want to be exclusive in terms of who's allowed to participate, who's allowed to enjoy the fruit of this society, and how do we define what is the common good? So that's one thing we had, but Celeste, you wanted to also share the other topic?
Yeah. So I'm wondering if let me preface it this way, because I'm trying to figure out how I want to introduce it. I was much more glib yesterday when we were talking, but I was reading two articles, and I found it really interesting that they both dealt with taking real people, real public figures, and put them into the fictitious environment of a television show, and in them certain statements were made about these real people in this fictitious setting. And I found it really interesting because it blurred the line in a unique fashion that I don't see necessarily beneficial at all, but given our current political environment, people might decide this is a new tool that can be used to disrupt our relationship with political figures. So to cut to the chase really quickly, there is an episode did you have an epiphany?
No, I was wondering, I'll let you continue because you say there's an episode, but I just thought maybe this isn't the movie or the show that I'm thinking of, but continue. Then
you might have another one. Yeah. Okay, so the one I first saw some days ago was how there was a brouhaha on Twitter about CBS putting on this episode of The Good Fight, this show. I've never watched it, or I've watched maybe one or two episodes. Well, anyway, The Good Fight finale has this character in it that accuses a real political official of being a sex offender. Then later on in the show, it says, oh, I made it up, it's a lie. But people were upset because they thought, well, wait a minute, hold on. Not only did this character accuse this state governor of being a sex offender and then take it back, this is somebody who was actually being engaged in an election, a current election. And so in the story, however, the person who told the lie said that they made up the lie about this governor to give Trump a boost in the 2024 poll. And I thought, now this is interesting, because now they're weaponizing television shows in a totally different fashion. They take a real character and they put it in a fictitious environment, make these statements, and they can all say, oh, but the people in this story, this is a fictitious event. This never really happened. Okay, so that's one episode in one part of the TV land. In another episode of TV land, you got this article that came out that I read, I think this was in The Insider, that Prince Philip considered suing Netflix because there was an episode of The Crown which implied that he was responsible for his sister's death. So here he is getting upset because as a real person in a fictitious land called TV and The Crown, it was implied that he had something to do with, you know, the death of a sibling. And so he was even going so far as to sue. So I'm looking at this and I'm wondering, have we weaponized television and the movies in a new and novel way to even further inflict pain, not only on our so-called democracy, but on our consciousness as a whole in perceiving what's real and what's not real, and blurring to some novel and bizarre in our mixing of reality and fiction. You know, I was impressed.
Okay.
I mean, it wasn't a good thing, but it was a thing that really was new because of the way technology allows us a lot of license.
Oh, well, and again, you know, there's nothing new under the sun when you mention
that. True that.
Immediately, I thought of Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter. But that's okay. That's where my mind went. But you know, I missed that part of history about the American Civil War. But okay. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. Please give us a call if you have some thoughts about other of our topics this morning to enlighten us and the audience. Again, 503-231-8187. What is the state of our society? Is democracy at risk? And how do you want to phrase this other one?
Well, have we weaponized TV to the point where it's not just democracy at risk, but, you know, our ability to distinguish between what's real and what's not? Have we trespassed on not arbitrary lie, but necessary lie, you know, in mixing the reality and the fiction? I mean, don't get me wrong. It's not as though I think the monarchy, which, as I, you know, had said to you, was an incredibly cruel and oppressive regime. I don't see any need to protect any element of the British monarchy. And I know there are a lot of people who would just as soon be shut of it as anything. You know, so I don't have any problems saying I don't protect that. And as for, you know, the particular governor in question in that television show, I'm not in love with his politics. You know, I'm bewildered as to how he had such a comfortable reelection.
Well, give us a call and give us your thoughts. And again, Celeste went profound. I went a different route. So I thought of Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter. And then I thought, of course, Forrest Gump. You know, that was a witness of history. Let's see what our caller has to say. Let's hear from Molly. Good morning, Molly. How are you this Monday morning?
Good morning. Celeste. Well, I'm fine and awaiting your program as always, which I really love to listen to and think about things. So what I just want to add to the conversation, since I have this democratic opportunity of a democracy where the people, of the people and by the people. So first of all, the climate summit, the COP27, I had to look that up. It's such a long word that it just stands for, you know, all these nations. Well, it's happening in Egypt, as we know, and I was listening to Amy Goodman earlier. I wasn't quite sure I think the person fasting to the death over situations, maybe broke his fast with some water. I'm not sure about that, but one thing that stood out to me, and Amy's there in Egypt actually right now, is that the African countries are not representative because they're the ones being the most affected by climate change. And they're the ones who can't really even afford the hotel rooms at these posh places, the Nile, Hilton, and everything else. So it's up to the wealthy countries who are doing the bigger polluting to take care of this problem that we share as a planet. But the other thing I really wanted to mention, since democracy is your subject of the day, is I recently was watching something and I was reminded on the Jewish people and reminded of the time of the Holocaust when a boat was sent over here. And Cecil, you mentioned Franklin Roosevelt, who he was the president at the time who, when this boat of almost 1,000 Jewish people escaping, and at this time the Holocaust was under full, you know, swing. I mean, they were marching these people into ovens. They were turned away. First they went to Cuba. I Googled it, the good old Googling. Turned away. They came here. They went to Canada. It was the red tape of our democracy that, and this is what I'm speaking to, red tape gets in the way of humanitarian decisions. Now, in that case, sure, they didn't have their immigration papers, but an exception should have been made considering the situation. And this is another shame on our country, along with the American Indian and the African Americans in our country, and now the Jewish people, that we turned away that boat and the president made that decision. It's very sad and shameful to me, and I just want to say that for democracy, we have to cut through the red tape sometimes.
Yeah,
look at the humanitarian situation.
Certainly we do, and again, history is not unique. You know, we have children on the borders who are right. In cages this day in
yes,
terms of our inhumanity. Yeah.
Right. So some kind of democracy we got here. Well, I just want to say that I'm feeling really good about the way things are leaning after this latest election. So I'll leave it on that positive
okay.
note and hope for the future that we're learning something along the way. Thank you so much for your show. I'll keep listening.
Thank you, Molly.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your call. So let's go to Cody, and then while we're waiting on our next caller, kind of comment on both of their calls. Good morning, Cody. You're up next.
Good morning.
Yes.
How are you?
Yes, we can. You're on the air.
All right. So let's say something very interesting. She said experiment. And I don't think most regular people don't really appreciate that word, experiment. Because there was a conversation that went down, I think, with what's his name? Henry Kissinger, and I think a North Vietnamese dignitary, and he said, well, what do you think of the French Revolution? And that Vietnamese person said, well, how did he say it? That remains to be seen, or that's, let's see. It's still too early to tell.
Hmm.
And what when we're talking about dealing with a democracy, we have to deal with, or at least a republic, we have to deal with the ugly things that come with that republic.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those is corruption. And I don't really think average Americans can appreciate how bad the corruption has gotten in this republic and what it's going to take to try to recapture it. Because we were already running a de facto feudalistic society already. And what I mean is that everybody had their hands out, and the de facto feudal lords, a good example of a de facto feudal lord to me is like the Koch brothers.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They control who, they control which way everything goes. And everyone's kind of like ignoring that fact, or at least that observation. And then you have to say, well, let's look at FTX. We know about that crypto exchange going down under, right? Did you know that a lot of the money that our Congress was sending to Ukraine was being sent through FTX? Are you aware of that?
I wasn't.
No. Okay, a lot of money, a lot of taxpayer money was being washed through that exchange that just went into a black hole to zero.
Okay, now wait a minute. Let me I gotta ask you something real quick. You said washed. You didn't say sent the second time. You said washed. That has a whole different connotation. So,
well, yeah, because that money was supposed to actually go to war and to help them fight the Russians and all that. But instead of using that money to go to the effort, what they did was, and I'm neutral on the effort, by the way, is what was done with the money, is that that money was taken from the American public and it went straight to FTX. All right. I don't think people understand the gravity of what's happening in this country and the level of corruption that's going down and how everyone has their hand in a cookie jar and everyone's hand's kind of stuck. So now we're caught between this corruption and the United States Constitution, and I, for one, you know, I identify as a descendant of slaves and black people. You know, this is why I have to go back to say an experiment. Hey, you said it. You said it correctly. Will you call it an experiment?
Yes, I did. I said it deliberately and on purposely.
Mm-hmm. What, this,
well,
this
you're first you said corruption. And
it's pretty
when I look at,
I think go ahead. I'm sorry.
I would say you said corruption, and I want to circle back to that because I think that's, like you said, a key point. The fact that we have sheriffs who don't want to support the very law that they purport, you know, that they swore to support, shows me that we have a whole different moral compass when it comes to sussing out corruption or and recognizing what sworn duty actually is. So I feel like corruption is part of that bedrock of the democratic experiment, because while these white men were writing this document, they weren't including certain white men and they certainly weren't including everybody else. And so that's a corrupt action in and of itself.
Yeah, I partially agree with you. I mainly say that is because there were certain founding fathers who were having debates on what to do with the slaves and how things were going to go along. And
yeah,
they knew at
yeah.
some point they were going to have to come to reckoning with it. And I'm not justifying it at all. It's just that it's the same exact corruption that, like you said, that it was wrong for that sheriff not to follow certain laws. Would it have been wrong for him 50 years ago not to follow segregation law? Not all laws are decent laws, and that's
yes.
where the Constitution comes in. And that, excuse me?
I said you get no argument from me. I totally agree. Not all laws are good laws.
Well, I mean, we could be real general, but it's real easy to misinterpret certain things and not be very specific when it comes up to certain laws that certain people aren't following. You know,
mm-hmm.
so not all those laws are just. So when somebody says, well, he's not following the law, shame on him, I say, well, you could have said the same thing 50 years ago.
Well, May I jump in terms of talking about laws, and not all laws are just or fair. That is true. At the same time, I'm also cognizant of those who have been principal the deniers or those who defied unjust laws. In terms of civil disobedience. And one thing that they were willing to do were to accept the consequences of civil disobedience. So you have people, you know, even today, who, you know, protest and are willing to be arrested. I wonder whether or not these sheriffs are willing to pay the consequences of their actions.
That remains to be seen, mainly because, as we can actually see, there's more than one way of disobeying a law. And this is where politics and political control of one's environment, which is what created the civil what created the voting rights law in the first place. Black Americans were hoping to achieve the same level of equality so that they could hire their own sheriffs to do the same exact thing this particular sheriff is doing for his precinct or for his area. It never got to that point, though. We have the highest black male incarceration on the planet. We have more black men in jail than there is other people in their own jail combined worldwide. But nobody wants to talk about that. So I'm saying is before we can start dealing with these really with the complicated issues, we're going to have to bring it back a couple of steps. If we're going to deal with following certain laws, knowing that the corruption in this country is so bad that we're dealing with billions of dollars with a country that's in so much debt, everybody's wondering how this is going to how this is going to get fixed. And it's like, is the spirit of the Constitution in the heart of the average American? I wonder sometimes.
Well,
because
you know, here's one more thing.
If an average person, whether they be rich, black, green, blue, Asian, or poor, if the average person don't appreciate the rights that's endowed upon them by God, and what I mean if they don't appreciate it, I mean is what happens when all of a sudden it's the other person who has their rights trampled on? Do we turn a blind eye because maybe somebody has their hand in our pocket? And that's basically what it comes down to in America. Or do we say, you know, this ain't right. If I keep letting too many of these canaries in the mineshaft die, it's a clear sign that there's gas down here and I'm next. Wow. But no one's looking at it like that. Everybody thinking, I'm going to get mine, you get yours, if you go down. And I can clearly see that they're currently on your American Bill of Rights. I can clearly see it. But it won't happen to me. Now look at what happened. Okay?
Well,
and look,
you know, you brought up so many good points.
We all know that.
Another hour-long conversation.
Excuse me?
I said you brought up so many good points. We can have another hour-long conversation. But I'm going to have to end it right there and go to our next caller. But I want to thank you, Cody, because you brought up some... Hello? Did we lose Cody?
Good morning.
Tuasi's on. Tuasi's on. Good morning.
Good morning, Tuasi.
Hey there. I love KBOO. I love you guys so much. I just need to start out by saying that. You know, for me, it's really a perilous time for democracy because a lot of the people who I love are living outside right now. And, you know, my ancestors are indigenous, so we just live, you know, we lived a very outside lifestyle. Well, the way the law works now, they can... intern you if you live outside, and it's legal. And the people doing the internment, they're oath keepers, right? The Portland police said it's okay if you're an oath keeper, you can be in the police department. So, I mean, police bureau. So, you know, when we have laws that are unjust, and we have law enforcement who are insurrectionists, that openly defy the rule of law, it's not a very promising note for democracy.
No, I agree.
for me, I just try and engage in radical levels of liberty and just exist in a space where I can be as free as I possibly can be. But, you know, it's extreme privilege because most of my friends don't get that. They have to suffer under tyrannical law. So, you know, if we believe in human rights, then if what we stand for is liberty and justice, then we can't de facto accept tyrannical rule. And, you know, I don't have enough tea to throw in the Willamette River to make my statement, but the government here has failed the interests of liberty by creating tyranny in legal terms. So anyway, I just wanted to bring it back home to right where we live.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you so much for raising those critical questions in terms of how we live our lives. You are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO.
Portland.
Thank you. Our number is here, 503-231-8187. Is democracy on life support, or do we care? Give us a call. Your reflection. We've heard from three individuals this morning with a range of opinions about the state of our society. How do we define our society, and who participates? A lot of questions, and maybe that's also a part of what it means to try to live out this experiment of democracy, of social engagement. It includes having the conversation in the public square, when this is your electronic public square. So give us your thoughts, 503-231-8187, and participate in this democratic experiment. Call speech.
Well, you know, during society, or the concept society, back into the discussion here, I have to say that the combination of disenfranchisement and moral ambiguity and moral outrage makes for a heady brew for a Monday morning. But it should make you really alert and aware to how fragile this particular experiment is, because it was based on exclusion and excluding people. And so when you talk about, you know, states, let me use this as an illustration. You have these counties in Oregon that want to secede from the state because they feel that their needs, their concerns, their perspective, their point of view are not being heard and respected. Mm-hmm. And according to the democratic principles put forth, they're both exercising democracy and it might be kind of a skewed way of looking at it, but they're exercising their democratic rights and privileges and responsibilities, and they're also unraveling the very foundation. Mm-hmm. They weren't, to their mind, their needs weren't included. And so one of the things that I've been looking at with a colleague of mine is how the so-called working class white guy is just feeling all disenfranchised about stuff. And a lot of times we forget that, just like, you know, Tawasi had mentioned, people who were already here, and then like Cody mentioned, you know, people who were brought here, but still are not part of the fabric, meaning, you know, Black Americans and indigenous populations, you know, none of us were included. None of our needs are being, or few of our needs are being met. So we got a belly of discontent, you know, a belly full of discontent. But the fact that it's being exacerbated by those people in control, the elites, you know, the electeds, who don't want us they don't want us to come together and have a table to sit at where we can discuss what we need, but instead they keep us in a state of agitation and distrust. It seems to go against what you would think they would want for this state. You would think they find some way of mollifying all of us poor working, you know, stiffs, so that we would keep pretending that we believe in this illusion of democracy, and we would not be asking for more money in our paychecks, and we would not be asking for better schools or housing or, you know, health care, but we'd be happy to keep working 40, 50, 60 hours plus in the sweatshops and the salt mines, and keep making this giant machinery called Democratic America keep pushing. And I just, you know, I'm caught by all the multiple ironies, the layers of irony. I don't know. We don't have enough time really to discuss it.
Well, and it's food for thought and reflection. So we'll have opportunity for a few minutes this morning, but I hope that you will reflect on it and engage in it with those around you in conversations this week in the days ahead.
Yes, most definitely. Well, we still have time. We want to invite you to give us a call, especially if you've never called into either More Talk Radio or KBLO. In general, give us a call at 503-231-8187. I'm Celeste. I'm here with Cecil. And we're talking about the unraveling of the democratic experiment called the United States of America. You know, are we looking at the unraveling of our democracy, of our government, And if so, you know, can anything be done about it? What do we want to do about it? And how can we even bring such a desperate group, desperate group of people together to the table to talk about what we can do?
Well,
because we even have different ideas of remedies.
And one thing we can do, I'm just seeing right now, is that there's some speculation that if the GOP continues to maintain and wins the House of Representatives, there is some speculation that because the Speaker of the House does not have to be a member of the House, that Donald Trump could be installed as the Speaker of the House. Let's go to our next caller. As we think of this, Bill, and then we have Mitt. Bill, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, everyone. How's everybody doing? I think I can help you folks out as far as the legal situation with the counties, because in each county in America, the sheriff, he is the top law enforcement official in each county in the United States. And what's very important is usually he is the top elected law enforcement official in the county, and they tend to be more rural. So, you know, the sheriff, you know, whoever he or she might be, you know, they see the folks and their constituents who voted for them almost on a daily basis, unlike an urban area like here in Portland.
Right.
And so when I hear, well, how can the sheriff, you know, turn their nose up at a state mandate, well, it's very easy because they are the top, again, they're the top elected enforcement official in that county, and they have a lot of power. They have a lot of power. And obviously, I believe that it was down in Linn County that the sheriff said that she, you know, which I think is very important, she will not enforce the magazine ban. And in fact, I went down there yesterday and actually purchased two or three of them myself. And the entire transaction went through like nobody even cared. But you have to realize in Linn County, they voted, I think it was 72-73, almost three-fourths, you know, no against 114.
Okay. Well, thank you for your call.
Oh, sure, you bet. Enjoy your show.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And let's go to our next caller, Mitch.
Yeah, no, every caller that you've had so far today has made such good points. It's unusual, this percentage. And the previous caller makes the point that I wanted to make, but he illustrates it. And I just want to sum it up in the oxymoron of having a republic, and it was really Cecil that started this, going back to the Franklin quote. What Cecil didn't mention was that Ben Franklin said that to a woman coming out of the convention, and at that point, women didn't have the right to vote, even under a republic. So a republic, if you can keep it, is meaningless if it's a pay-to-play republic.
Mm-hmm.
And a pay-to-play republic is the oxymoron that we're almost not allowed to confront in our broadcast media because we have a corporate captured media, except for community radio, you know, or independent press if you're rich enough to own one. So you know, that is the central oxymoron that runs through everything from slavery that we didn't confront, everything we don't confront, the failure to prosecute white-collar crime. And this is not a racially black good, white bad situation, because in fact it was under Barack Obama and his Attorney General Eric Holder who set a precedent in law that if the corporations who are too big to fail are also too big to jail and refuse to criminally prosecute all the fraudulent financial crime that got bailed out by the previous Bush and Cheney administration. And they went ahead and implemented the bailout for the lenders, but not the borrowers. And so every problem you can point to almost comes down to that oxymoron that we're not allowed to discuss. Is it a republic if it's a pay-to-play republic?
Well, I'm going to say this. What other example can you point to that is not a pay-to-play republic?
Well, that, no, and, I don't
but,
even think Plato minute,
no,
dealt with that.
But wait, let me finish, because that begs the question as to whether or not there is any other kind. Because if all we have ever had in this whole human existence are pay-to-play governments, regardless of whether it's a monarchy, a republic, or democratic, republic, whatever, it begs the question, do we even want to think that there's a different type? Because in human endeavors, you know, you're going to find that level of corruption where everything we do is tainted. So I'm thinking, you know, you asked a legitimate question. I think it's a valid question, but my comeback is we don't know any other kind. That's all we've ever done. So why are we talking like we're going to do better?
No, Celeste, that takes us back to your emphasis, which I think is a good one, on the experimental nature of what this republic is, because you're right that through history it's all been pay to play. If we have a genuine experiment, we will question the pay to play nature of our republic. I don't think it is an experiment. I think the experiment is a kind of false flag operation to keep the natives within a feudal system. And capital is the feudal lord.
Hey,
I can't even agree with that. I mean, I can't even disagree with that. I think you have hit the nail on the head, because when Cecil and I were talking, we talk about how here in the United States we want to see democracy around the world, and but the truth is we don't want to see democracy. We don't want to export democracy. We don't really even want to export capitalism. What we on the United States want to do is export consumerism. That's what we do. You know, that's our product. And so therefore, you know, regardless of our exalted views of how we govern ourselves and how we could live, when it comes down to it, there's some robber baron somewhere, and we're all serfs on their plantation, you know.
And I think that's easy to illustrate in a lot of different ways. And I just wish that the American people would politically organize to take back some little sliver of the broadcast media that could be in the public interest. Community radio is not the same.
Community radio.
All of our competitors in the global marketplace have one state-sponsored broadcaster that is insulated from corporate control. We are the only major developed country that doesn't have that, because our public broadcasting is underwritten by the corporations.
But look, let's back up here. And again, we don't have enough time to have a good discussion with this. But other countries may have insulation from corporate interest, but they don't have insulation from governmental control.
Oh, you're
because
right.
Because a lot of yeah. So I mean, in our human experiment of media, you know, it's either controlled by the government or it's controlled by corporations. Few, if any, have anything controlled by the community itself, which is why, you know, I believe in community media, whether it be, you know, TV or radio or internet, you know, whatever. It's vital that we have it, but, you know, we don't have enough time. You brought up such great points, but how would we get to that particular model that you're espousing? I think it's great.
Hey, thank you so much.
We got to let you go, though, because we got another caller. I thank you for your call. I thank you for your points. And we got a little bit of time left here, and I want to get to Francis. Good morning, Francis.
Hi. I wanted to say something about 114, but I also wanted to comment on this last. It seems that the problem is that the government is being controlled by corporations. When the
it
people
is.
Speak
yeah.
when the people speak, things change. And I think in a little small way, the last election, they kind of put the brakes on some things, but not everything. But the election deniers kind of were defeated pretty bad. So that's a good thing. And we just have to figure out how to stop calling these corporations that can't go to prison because they're not people, allowing them to be considered as people. So some way that's going to happen. But on 114, a dynamic that was brought to my attention that I hadn't been fully I was aware of it, but not, I didn't pay much attention. I talked to a man who'd done some time in prison, and he doesn't want to buy a gun. He's a very mild mannered, peace loving person, but he could not buy a gun because of the criminal background check. And there's a lot of people in that same situation. They have nonviolent felonies on their record, but because of the way this law is written, and everyone just assumes criminal background checks, that'll get rid of all the bad guys. It also eliminates a lot of good guys, and it also is very imbalanced racially. A lot of people, we know everyone
and Francis, we're near the end of time, but I want to say that among those who created this ballot initiative, there's a racial equity component as a part of it. That is,
I know,
as a very much part of it. So
some of those issues are
being addressed.
Hopefully, they will address the fact that there are some subjective decision making processes along the way that need to be. There need to be rules set up on who gets denied and who doesn't.
Right. So yeah. And so there's the whole process before it becomes.
And I imagine it's all going to go be taken to court anyway.
Yeah.
Because of constitutional issues, so we'll see what happens.
Thank you so much.
All right. You guys take care.
Thank you so much, Frances.
Yes, thank you for your call.
Before we go, I wanted to acknowledge that the woman that Benjamin Franklin talked to was Elizabeth Wyland Powell. Now, she was not a delegate to the Constitutional Convention because, as the caller mentioned, women were not allowed to do that. But she remained a powerful force in Philadelphia social and political circle, and her family was very well connected, wealthy merchants, and her husbands and was active in government and served as mayor as the city. So Elizabeth Wyland Powell, we are trying to make this republic work. We'll see.
Well, we want to thank you for making this More Talk Radio episode and experiment and communication work. And we hope that we have encouraged you to help KBOO still work by supporting KBOO. Go to our KBOO.fm and donate now. Thank you all for your calls, for the great conversation, for supporting KBOO. Thank you, Ray. Thank you, Cecil. Stay tuned. Coming up next is the Old Mo Variety Hour here on KBOO Portland.
I'm Naomi Klein, and you are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.